Compared to the favelas in Rio, the Mirai housing estates are havens of tranquility. Hey, no scooters here. It's no good. There are people who live here. And it's not good for the kids. Go on, guys. All they have in common is the absence of the state. When his neighborhood became dangerous for the public services, Zubir spoke to the housing administration about controlling the rowdier elements. The mediator's method is to be firm, but not unpleasant. And there's a place available until midnight for the kids who have nowhere else to go. In the past, it was the community police that did this kind of work. Jean-Pierre Avrin used to be the head of the Toulouse police. He's now left the national force and is working for the municipal police. He'd set up a community policing project in the housing estates of Mirai. The video is barely 10 years old, but is now almost historic, certainly unusual. Relaxed-looking police in shirt sleeves in Mirai. The police should not be cut off from the people. It won't be effective. The police have to be close to the citizens. It's the only way to make it work. I think the community police I knew was well liked by the residents. They used to call the youngsters by their first names. And instead of fining them something straight away, they'd say, "Oh, if you could move your car, please, that would be great." They spoke to the kids, and the kids would shake their hands. Now, if you shake a policeman's hands, you'd be considered an informer. Nicolas Sarkozy puts an end to community policing when he is the Interior Minister in 2003. He summons Avrin and his men before the cameras to let them know he's not pleased by their results. There are many of you where the delinquents are.
Vous n'êtes pas des travailleurs sociaux.
You're not social workers. The principal mission of the police is to investigate, arrest, and fight criminal behavior. When I look at the statistics of 2001, 2002 are bad enough, but 2001, to humiliate police officers live in front of the cameras, I had never seen anything like that before. For those who were present, for the policemen, those who were involved for 4 years, to tell them like that, it was a disgrace, disloyal. In the 3 years after the disbanding of the community police, the incidence of violent crime increased by 48% in Mirai. And the rioting witnessed throughout France in 2005 ravages the neighborhood. If they venture into Mirai these days, the police come in body armor. The area is tough, and not just for the police. The nurses don't come as often, neither do the firemen, and the ambulances have stopped coming altogether. It sort of became abandoned because they were scared about being ambushed by the youngsters, not to mention the police. To them, they are the state. So people no longer support the state. Well, let's say they don't trust the state anymore. In the 7 days spent on the estates, we only spotted one police car, and that was a long way off. After saying we could interview them, the Toulouse police changed their minds. In 3 years, the National Police Force has been cut by 11,000. You can't claim that security is a priority if you cut thousands of police jobs. There was a sharp increase in the number of cars burned, physical attacks, the absence of police on the ground, especially in the more difficult zones. As soon as authority is absent, especially the police, it's like nature, which can't stand vacuum. It creates a replacement authority, which may differ depending on the area or circumstances. I was summoned before senior police officers, and they said, "So, what's all this about them? Is it a militia?" Everyone's talking about it. They felt threatened by it. It bothered them, calling us a militia. A militia with no weapons. If you want to call us a militia without weapons. Our weapons are words. That's it, really.
Et c'est ça, quoi.
It's a small aperitif in the open air. Here we are then. We said we wouldn't make too much noise so as not to be a nuisance. After that, we said, well, you better leave. Take your bottles and leave. And don't leave bottles lying around here because they get broken and that could cause a lot of damage. The difference is that if a policeman comes to check us, he might smile, but he's stressed. I don't know if he lives out in the countryside and then comes here, but it's better when people who grew up around here and who know what it's all about and who's who, they sort of understand all of that. We're here to stay with them. Sort it out peacefully, quietly, like. We're getting ready, it seems, to allow private security firms to take over some of the work on public property, say, which is a terrible mistake, because all it will do is aggravate the differences between the haves and the haves-not. A two-speed security, in other words. There'll inevitably be one sort of security for the rich and another for the poor, to put it simply. The Rocinha Favela in Rio. The city's prefect is about to inaugurate a brand new health center in the middle of the favela. The drug traffickers are invisible. The prefect has come without an armed escort. We're going to urbanize all the favelas in the city by 2020. All of them. Rocinha will change. There'll be peace. And listen well, I mean peace. The governor will be responsible. Everyone has a right to live and live in good health. Here's the plaque, so applause now. For President Lula's Brazil, the fight against crime means investing in the public services. The people know it, and so do the thugs. The party's over here. At the same time, we need health and education programs, more daycare, more buildings, and to change the urban policies. All that will transform people's lives. Itamar Silvia has lived his entire life in a favela and was one of the first to benefit from state aid. He's a respected intellectual and a man who is angry. In his view, more than public funds will be needed to tear down the walls which separate the rich and the poor in Brazil. The investment we're seeing today in the favelas is only very recent. It's considered dangerous, a place that needs supervision, otherwise we'll all become criminals. What I say, it's not true. If it was true, there would have been a revolution a long time ago. Yes, unfortunately, because that's what we need to happen. In the evening, there's a big party in Rocinha. A new street has been opened. The government has demolished some hovels and built a sort of avenue whose buildings match the acrobatic and multicolored style of the favelas. Another reason to party. The drug traffickers have hung up their weapons and made way for samba. In the background are the condominios, over which night is falling in complete safety. Tell me, wouldn't you be better off in a condominium? Listen, I've been here 50 years and I'm not budging. It's marvelous up here. But you don't want to be safer? Ah, it's very safe here. Anyone can come here and everyone is welcome. No problems.
Speaking of walls, perhaps we can mention more walls which are undermining regional and world peace. The segregation wall built by the Zionist regime of Israel in the West Bank, Palestine. And the recent wall in Hungary, built to keep out asylum seekers trying to reach Europe. And that's it for this week on Aperture. Until next week and another episode of Aperture, goodbye.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Tour the pit.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You are listening to your favorite station,
Youth Station. And I am Bita here.
And I am your host, Zainab.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Bita. Assalamu alaikum, dear sister.
Alaikum assalam. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Whenever I come here, especially for your station, especially with you, okay, what do I want more? I'm really happy that I'm here again because it's a blessing. It's one of the blessings of my life.
Same here. I do not overthink. I am very quick to respond. Like whenever our producer ma'am messages us, are you available tomorrow? I'll like respond very frequently, yes. I won't even think, so I won't overthink. But there are circumstances, there are many other people when they will call me or when they want me, I would not just think, I would overthink. So let's talk about overthinking.
Yeah, it is one of my biggest problems, I can tell you. You know, I'm a big overthinker, unfortunately.
Really?
I overthink almost about everything, every night, every day, every hour. And in every communication, which is really bothering me. And I'm trying to, like, kind of heal it, because it's like a disease. And, life of an overthinker is like hell. You know, you, for example, meet one of your friends in the street, and she just tells you something really typical, but you overthink it for maybe 2 hours. So, you know, it's like kind of an obsessive behavior.
Right.
Okay. And it's somehow unavoidable. I mean, you cannot control it. But there are ways that can help you to control this overthinking. But
it's not always bad.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to tell you that it's not always bad. Overthinkers are somehow kind of nicer people. It's not because I'm an overthinker that I'm telling you, but you know, because they are too attentive, they pay too much attention to everything.
They're good at decision making.
Exactly.
Because they think so much.
They are the best decision makers, but here there is both pros and cons for being an overthinker.
Right.
Because
so let's talk about them.
Okay, because when you're an overthinker, you really think, you search, you ask other people, you do this, you do that, and you know, you have to spend time for doing all of this. Sometimes you have to be only quick and fast.
Right. And yeah, sometimes you have to be. In fact, most of the times, I would say
exactly.
You have to be.
And I think one of the definition of being an intelligent person is reacting to actions as fast as you can.
Right.
Yeah, okay. So overthinkers tend to be like more slow, tend to be like not that intelligent in this modern world, which is the world of being fast.
But I think overthinkers have less regrets. Sometimes, because they overthink. Since they overthink.
I know what you mean.
But and they take opinions of their friends as well. They take advices from people. And that's how they make decisions. And they may be slow, but they are like, they're less regretful, I guess.
I know they are less regretful, but they most overthink under less regrets. You know what I mean? You know, it's true that they have less regrets, but they so much overthink and they regret that.
It becomes obsessive sometimes. Like, what if? What if this happens? What if that happens? What if?
Exactly.
This is not
what if.
What if?
What if go for a short break?
Right.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is your favorite station.
I'm the overthinker here.
Yeah.
Bita
is on Youth Station with me, Zainab, and she's an overthinker. And she's so depressed with being overthinker.
No,
she's talking
repressed.
About the cons, and I'm talking about the pros of being overthinker. Well,
exactly, because you're not overthinker. Now, when you
sometimes
are an overthinker,
I am seriously. Sometimes I am. So, I am an overthinker when it comes to relations.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
it's really difficult, isn't it?
It is.
You suffer a lot, I know it.
You do?
Yeah, because I
can
do too.
I can see it. I can read it from her face.
Thank you for
all
being
the
frank with me. But, you know, I think sometimes it's good to be overthinker, especially in relationships, because you pay attention to something, to some behavior of the people which you are related with, your relationship.
And sometimes you're just only dwelling in the past situations.
Oh, my gosh. Do you have any example?
Sometimes, you know, as an overthinker, you rather than thinking more about the future, you continuously start thinking about the past incidents.
Yeah.
What happened? Why it happened? How it happened? And all that stuff, you know?
I know.
And that you're actually, my husband calls this your self-eating. You're doing self-eating.
Exactly.
Thinking so much. You're eating yourself by yourself. So, you know, dwelling or living in the past events or situations is a kind of thing overthinkers do, and it really ends up...
They are not that sort of people who seize the moment or something. They live in the past, they live in the future, they live in your brain, they think about what you think, they think about what if they did this and you, how would you react? And they think about all these things, which is really interesting. I mean, this is kind of talent.
Right.
This is a blessing that you consider all of the aspects of one story. I mean, for example, most of the people are like, they judge you by only your appearance, by only one aspect of you.
Right.
But overthinkers are kind of different, you know. They're like, okay, if I want to judge you, I judge you by your appearance, by your body language, by the way you speak to me, by the way, they consider all these aspects. And I think this is one of the biggest blessings of being an overthinker, which you consider all the aspects.
You consider all the aspects,
yeah,
right, but, as an overthinker.
Exactly. But, you know, I think there are some jobs that you, if you are an overthinker, then you're going to ruin your job.
Right.
Okay, even being here in Youth Station, we need to be really quick, you know?
Right.
We have to talk about things. We have to share our own experiences and talk to each other. And being an overthinker is not really good, because you may feel like, oh my gosh, why did I tell that in Youth Station? And it's really difficult. So, but there are some other jobs that being an overthinker could be a blessing.
You actually basically, you reflect a lot on the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
That's what an overthinker does. And that's what hurts that person.
It hurts.
Imagining
the
only the worst case scenarios, focusing more on the worst case scenarios.
But we have a strong imagination.
We do have.
Yeah. You know, we imagine all of the possible ways of every accident. And, you know, I think these overthinkers, you know, they know themselves more.
What is the worst thing about this overthinking? Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Let's give it here after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned. Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is your favorite station. This is Youth Station. I'm your host, Zainab, and here's my co-host.
Yeah, I'm Beta.
Beta, and she's an overthinker, and I'm trying to tell her how overthinking affects you. Basically, Beta, why do you overthink? It keeps you away from enjoying the present situation, doesn't it?
Sure. For sure. You know, it's one of the biggest problems of being an overthinker. Overthinking is good because you can know yourself more and more and more. And it boosts your self-knowledge so much.
Yeah.
Okay, that I think nothing else can do this miracle to you. But when you know yourself more, you become so kind of, you know... obsessive about every behavior that you show to other people.
Right.
Okay. And it will become kind of fake in your communication. You try to show something that you are not.
Right.
Okay? And this is, I think, one of the bug of being an overthinker.
So you keep that energy. You got to be handling a lot of patients in future. You're going to be doctor. And you need all that energy to handle all those patients out there. So do not waste that energy in the stresses or fixating the things that are out of your control. You know, Imam Ali al-Islam says that do not waste your intellect on things that are beyond your intellect. Your intellect has a capacity, yeah. and think only to that extent the capability it has. So we've got to be focusing on good things, basically, I think. Or we should be overthinking about hereafter, if we really want to overthink.
This is a nice way, and as I mentioned, this is a really great way to know yourself, know the world that you're living better. This overthinking itself is not bad or good, okay? The way we use it as a tool, the way we control it
right.
is the problem, you know? Unfortunately, most of the time we cannot control this overthinking about even about the afterlife. Sometimes right. you overthink that much that you become to this point of nihilism. Then this is so sad. You started from a part that you wanted to seek knowledge about the world,
right.
but you end up being empty.
I know.
Okay, so I think overthinking should have a leader, and this leader is you yourself.
Yeah,
that you have to control your thought, which is difficult.
You have to manage. You have to manage. You have to balance things.
Yeah,
and you know, Bita, I'll tell you as a mother, like if I overthink over the things, it has a direct impact on my kids. Like for example, there are situations yeah. where I want to react, and I overthink, and I react on the basis of overthinking, or I overthink on very small issues in the family. My child tomorrow does not have the capability to face difficult situations. I have to at times behave like, it's okay, it's not a big deal, it's not a big
yeah.
deal. But I behave like that, like saying to a big deal, it's not a big deal in front of my kids. They gain that strength to face difficult situations
nice.
In life. But sometimes when I, as a mother, I'm overthinking and reacting so much to the situations, like very small situations, I'm making it a big deal. I should be reacting like it's not a big deal.
So you're telling me sometimes this overthinking will lead to overreacting, which is a problem.
It does. It
yeah,
does lead
unfortunately.
To.
And so, it's all about
I
this
told
balance.
You, as a mother, if you're doing that yeah. in front of your kids, you won't be developing, you won't be growing up strong kids. You know?
I think you're going to kill their self-confidence and their strength to face just simple
problems. You're not basically
problems.
Affecting only yourself. You're affecting your children as well when you're reacting that way in certain
yeah.
situations because of your overthinking.
Yeah, and I think this overthinking is kind of like a disease that is communicable.
Right.
When you are an overthinker, your child or your children are going to be overthinkers too, you know, because they are watching your reactions towards everything that happens in your life.
Right.
And they take lessons, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I think my mother is an overthinker too. And, I'm not telling you that it's kind of from my genes, no, but it really is related to your parents being an overthinker.
Kind of, yeah, maybe. And I think one of the way out is sometimes take a break.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Take a break sometimes. I mean, we sometimes are overthinkers because we are stuck in a particular situation, stuck in a particular job. Sometimes take a break, like go for traveling. Traveling is really investing.
It's nice. My
traveling
break is
investing. Sometimes, like when I say take a break,
yeah.
just come out of your ideal situation and then go out for traveling, and then you know this will help you because when you're in a particular situation in that day to day daily life, you're draining your energy and on a particular thing. I think that leads you to overthinking
for sure.
and all. Sometimes it's necessary to take a break.
My own special method for this one is going to graveyard. You know, when I think
yeah,
about death,
yeah.
it feels like, okay, life is...
Now, overthink about that.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to overthink this. You know, I just think, okay, it's way too short just to overthink all of it. Just stop it for a short time and feel okay. It's not a big deal. This is life. Everybody is living. And you're only human being.
Exactly. It's really okay. And towards the end, Peter, we're running out of time.
Yeah,
so
fortunately.
I would say towards the end that take action on things you can control and let go of the things you can't.
Nice one. Just let's end our episode with this beautiful sentence.
Right.
Thank you to our listeners for listening to us. It was all the time.
You
I meet you
for today.
A while.
Thank you so much for listening. You were listening to Youth Station. Until another episode, wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Merciful. Once again, we are here, dear listeners. Assalamu alaikum. I am Beta, and again, I have the honor to be the host of today's episode for A Better Life. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, and as I told you, this is the program for A Better Life, my favorite one. As you know, we talked about some signs of being a true believer in order to have a better life and afterlife for sure. In this episode, I'm going to start it with one of the narrations from Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace be upon him. Once the Messenger of Allah sent Imam Ali to Yemen to guide people to Islam, teach them Islamic laws and regulations, and to spread Islam among the people, he said to Imam Ali, "Do not declare war on any person unless you have first invited him to Islam." This means that he should begin the mission by spreading Islam and explaining its principles to non-Muslims through clear proofs and reasoning. This is so because Islam is the religion of reason and knowledge. If any enter the faith, they become your brothers in religion. If they refuse Islam, then he should fight them for persisting in their unbelief and wanting to defend oppression and corruption. The Messenger of Allah said to Imam Ali, after explaining to him how to spread Islam and convey its message, "If Allah guides only one person through you, it will be better for you than all that the sun has risen or set over." It is something. Just look at the depth of the quote. You know, it is more than the sun has risen or set over. It means that if you can just get the true message of Islam to someone, it is something. It is really valuable. And it is one of ways that you can maintain your life in a better level. This is For a Better Life. And we're here to give you some ways, some lessons, and some beautiful narrations from our Prophet Muhammad and Ayman. Thank you for listening to me, but I think we have to go for a short break. About the noble hadith that we mentioned in the last part of the episode, the Messenger of Allah explains the significance of Islamic call da'wah and its great importance to Allah the Almighty. He also points out the greatness of those who invite or call others to Islam. These missionaries undertake the task of spreading Islam and inviting non-Muslims to enter into the faith, thus saving them from disbelief, oppression, and corruption. They also undertake the duty of guiding every deviated one who has gone astray from the right path by teaching Islamic laws, education, and thoughts. They also explain the right Islamic concepts. Surely, whoever guides a deviator, whether a non-believer in Islam or a Muslim who commits evil deeds but misunderstands Islam, gains more to his own benefit than owning the whole world, because the possessions of the world perish while the rewards of guiding people will remain permanent with Allah Almighty and will be a cause of Allah's pleasure. The believer who guides people will enter paradise for sure. Guiding others will gain the reward of paradise and Allah's pleasure, which is one of the biggest, actually, reward for every believer here. While actually possessing the whole world with his property and wealth, will gain nothing in the hereafter. So up to here, we were talking about one of the ways in order to have a better life, which is for sure inviting other people through good deeds. You are responsible for every person in your society. And this is the meaning of society that we discussed in the last episode, that when you're trying to have a better society, you have to start this change from yourself and then try to change other people. And the reward of changing other people into good deeds indeed is something. So it's obligatory for every Muslim to be a caller to Islam and to spread the word of Islam in every corner of the world. This is a responsibility. Today, there are more than 1 billion Muslims. Believers, through calling others, can convey the Islamic religion to mankind and spread its message to different parts of the world. Such work guides and reforms man. Without calling people to Islam, no one would be guided, and a true religion cannot spread to others. So you see the importance of this heavy responsibility on everybody's shoulder. So let's keep it here, dear listeners. We're going to go for a short break, and we're going to come back for the end part of the episode. Stay tuned.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. All I need, all I need, all I need, all I need, oh, 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 oh. All I need, all I need, and I know that you see how much you need to me. You mean to me, 'cause your love is all I need. To be all I can be, and I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
IRIB English Radio, you're listening to the program For a Better Life. We are here talking about the things that will make you a better Muslim and will make your life here and hereafter. One of the things that we mentioned in this episode was guiding other people through the right path. In order to do that, you have to be a true believer. By all means, you have to find your path, you have to find the true soul of the religion, and you have to find the meaning of Islam. Then you can convey the message of this beautiful religion to other people. It doesn't matter those people are from those non-believers in Islam, or are the Muslims who may think they believe in Islam, but they are misunderstanding these principles with the things that they are acting in real life. So Muslims themselves should learn about Islam and act according to its laws and principles, inviting others to believe in Islam and act accordingly. Indeed, guiding one person is better than whatever man possess in this world, because the guidance is a step towards saving people and reforming them. The meaning of guidance in Islamic call da'wah is to spread Islam among people and to teach them Islamic laws, principles, and ideologies. So, the point here is that for teaching other people something, you have to know it by your heart. It's something that comes from your heart that will make other people a true believer. And you have to accept this responsibility as one of yours, because in this modern world of these days, we have this feeling like we are only responsible for our own sake. It's not like that. We are living in a selfish world that everybody with his selfishness is so much strong that you may find it really difficult to guide other people through a way that even you're not sure of. So in this world of confusion, of sadness, of sorrow, of being lost, if you can guide someone, it means something. And according to Holy Quran, there would be a big reward for you hereafter. And when we're talking about a better life and having a better life, we don't mean it in this world. And as you know, this world is only a limited edition of what we are. So don't forget that we are here giving advice, giving you the narrations and the stories in order for you to have a better life. Thank you for listening to me. It was all the time we had for today's episode. I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
As the crisis in Europe begins to deepen, there are concerns in Germany that the country will become the continent's, quote, sick man. Deutsche Bank CEO Christian Suing said Germany will become the sick man of Europe if structural issues are not addressed immediately. He said, quote, it is also true that there are structural weaknesses that hold back our economy and prevent it from developing its great potential. We will become the sick man of Europe if we do not address these structural problems now. The Deutsche Bank CEO said the biggest task lies with banks. Suing also listed other issues that Germany is facing. They include high and unpredictable energy costs, slow internet connections, outdated rail networks, digitalization backlogs, a lack of skilled workers, excessive bureaucracy, and long approval procedures. The term sick man of Europe was first used to describe Europe's largest economy in 1998.
The European economy is doing better than the German economy. Germany is the sick man of Europe in the moment. There has been a decline in manufacturing output trend-wise since 2018. It's not a short-term phenomenon. And that has to do with the automobile industry, which is the heart of the German industry, and many things hinge on that. So we are on a declining trend. And then comes the war. Putin cut off the gas. Germany shut off deliberately its nuclear power plants, and one wonders where the energy should come from.
As it tried to grapple with the challenges of a post-reunification environment, the EU's largest economy continues to grapple with challenges in its manufacturing sector as it suffers from higher energy costs. It officially slipped into a technical recession in the first quarter of the year as GDP growth was revised from zero to negative 0.3%. The Bundesbank announced that the economy was likely to shrink this quarter thanks to slow private consumption and the increasing weakness of the industry. Germany's energy-intensive sectors, particularly manufacturing and automotive production, have borne the brunt of the disruption of its gas supplies from Russia. These industries constitute the bedrock of Germany's economic might, and any disruption in their operations has far-reaching consequences. Some firms are contemplating relocating their production facilities to more energy-stable regions.
Germany has a big problem with, or had already a big problem with skilled labor, but now it's a shortage of overall labor, even unskilled labor. And this has started in the pandemic when many people who were working in low-paid jobs, they found different jobs in different industries that rose during the pandemic, but they are now missing in other jobs. And some people also left Germany. Others came, but they were not so well integrated into the labor market. So in general, we have this shortage of labor in Germany, and we also have problems with supply chains. There were lots of disruptions. There are, of course, the war in Ukraine.
Earlier, Earlier in September, a report by Spanish daily El País cited analysts who believe that Germany is staring at the end of its economic model. According to experts, the German model hinges on three ingredients, which include cost competitiveness, technological leadership in its industry, and geopolitical stability. But following the breakout of the war in Ukraine, all these factors are now gone. The cutoff of Russian gas, which accounted for more than 50% of the gas consumed in Germany, has impacted the electro-intensive industry, forcing businesses to restructure their business and to close plants. Meanwhile, the IFO business climate indicator for Germany declined for the fourth consecutive month to 85.7 in August 2023, reaching the lowest level since October 2022.
But what is true is that we are currently in economically not in a good shape. We are probably in a recession, going into a deeper recession. And there are a lot of worries about the future, the economic future, and also there's a lot of uncertainty. And one thing in Germany is the inflation, rising prices has always been a big issue in the German history and in the back in the minds of the people. And so I think the rise in inflation in the recent years is also something which is leading to these results.
The significant deterioration in business morale suggests that Europe's largest economy has not yet overcome its challenges. Berlin's chances of reversing the situation in the short term remain slim, and the political landscape, a three-party coalition in government, does not make it any easier. The broader repercussions of Germany's deindustrialization and its aging workforce are looming, casting a shadow over the European Union's economic strength and competitiveness. Meanwhile, Berlin is planning to restore a 19% sales tax on gas and heat deliveries from the end of this year. The move will effectively end the current discount rate 3 months earlier than planned. The value-added tax on natural gas was cut from 19 to 7% last October to ease the pressure on consumers amid soaring energy costs. A recent report by the German economy minister projected that gas prices in the EU's largest economy are likely to soar and remain high until at least 2027, unless additional emergency measures are taken. An emotional reunion. Two of the five Iranians illegally detained by the U.S. have returned to the Islamic Republic, their homeland, reunited with their family. The crime? Conducting business, which the U.S. claimed had violated U.S. sanctions. Meanwhile, the five prisoners held in Iranian jails have also been freed. Their crime, far more serious than just conducting business. They were charged with spying. The Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi and his team conducted very difficult behind-the-scenes talks, an arduous task since Iran and the U.S. cannot negotiate directly. Thanks to mediators in Qatar and in Oman, the release has taken place. This was deemed as a great accomplishment for the Raisi administration on humanitarian grounds. The Iranian president has promised that it would safeguard Iranians' rights and fight for Iran's rights at any cost. Incredible double standards are at play in the way Western media covered this story. It seems like the media forgot that the U.S. had imprisoned Iranians, illegally at that, in their prisons, emotionally covering the released prisoners from Iran while condemning Iran and its officials. Not even scant coverage of the prisoners of the bereaved families on the Iranian side. One of the prisoners held by Iran on spying charges, Siamak Namazi, was a businessman held since 2015. He thanked the U.S. President Joe Biden for ultimately putting the lives of American citizens above politics, as if the Iranian president had not done that. But the politics Namazi is talking about is out of U.S.'s own doing. The sanctions-obsessed U.S. uses its sanctions policy to twist the arm of nations into following its foreign policy line. Even on the day of the prisoner release, U.S. sanctioned the former president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He was Iran's president 10 years ago. Additionally, the U.S. sanctioned Iran's intelligence ministry, and just days before that, it had sanctioned 29 individuals and entities in connection with what it claimed was violent suppression of nationwide protest including Press TV. In the case of Siamak Namazi, he was sentenced to 10 years in prison for espionage and cooperation with the U.S. government and foreign intelligence networks. His company, Atiye Bahar Consulting in Tehran, was associated covertly acting with the U.S. government's companies anti-Iranian in nature, like the VOA TV channel, the U.S. government's Institute for National Strategic Studies, INSS, at the Pentagon's National Defense University, and the Office of Iranian Affairs at the U.S. State Department. The Iranian President, Ebrahim Raisi, is in New York for the yearly UN General Assembly meeting. His spokesman said the message of Iranian President to the world is, quote, peace, justice, confronting discrimination and domination, unilateralism and terrorism, and the West supporting terrorist groups, the main messages of the Iranian nation. True to his word, since he came to power, the Iranian president has fast-tracked Iran's relations with a host of nations, extending his hand of friendship and peace to leaders from Latin America to Africa to West Asia and to the East with Asian countries. Yet the U.S. has described this government as what it calls a rogue terrorist regime. Question is, has Iran done anything to fit that description? Does Iran go and confiscate the earnings of another nation, forcing the country that has those funds to hold it hostage? Or does Iran go and confiscate another country's oil tanker at sea, which in essence is a form of piracy? In this case, the U.S. reason, it was a sanctions enforcement operation. These types of sanction-driven acts, however, have come back to haunt the U.S., along with its allies, like its European partners. Countries have realized that it is not Iran that has rogue elements, but the U.S. The sanctions regime, the weaponization of the dollar, and its foreign policy agenda has left the U.S. isolated on the international stage. Organizations like BRICS and the SCO are testament to that. Countries are rejecting the U.S. approach and are aligning themselves with each other. Some of the U.S. and Western media are accusing Iran of executing a hostage and ransom act. This line doesn't have many buyers, especially when it comes to the topic of prisoners. A country that has the most number of prisoners inside its jails cannot accuse another country like Iran of being rogue, never mind the illegal torture that takes place there. The U.S. also has no credibility when it supports a regime like Israel, which detains and jails people without charge or trial, almost on a daily basis. This is while Iran, inside the country, has pardoned thousands of prisoners on a yearly basis based on Iran's leader discretion and approval. So the Western hostage and ransom narratives against Iran doesn't hold ground. Western pundits and so-called rights groups fail to mention Iranians languishing in U.S. prisons. They accuse Iran of falsifying charges against the prisoners, like spying charges. Maybe the U.S. needs to be reminded how it was spying on Iran on a massive scale during the time it had an embassy in Iran. But the U.S. doesn't learn its lessons and continues down a path of failed maximum pressure campaign, a failure admitted by U.S. officials. This is why Iran will continue down its path of imprisoning anyone suspected of spying and acting against Iran's national security, as it has done countless number of times.
$10 an hour, 5 years, seniority.
One of the striking auto workers in the U.S. Thousands of United Auto Workers are officially on a strike after three Detroit automakers failed to reach an agreement with the union.
What appears that now is going to happen is the UAW is planning targeted strikes across all three companies. So striking at just specific plants.
We're going to get to that story soon. But did you know that the U.S. is experiencing strikes in other sectors as well? From UPS, the carrier service, to Starbucks, the coffee chain,
we pull the shots.
We call the shots.
Workers at many U.S. companies are taking to the streets. In short, they are fighting for better pay and improved working conditions.
We have hotel workers on strike across the region, everywhere from the LA Grand, which joined the strike this morning, JW Marriott, Ritz-Carlton.
We have a very weak labor law. There are a lot of aspects of our economy and our politics that concentrate a lot of power in the hands of corporations.
And there may be more strikes to come. UPS employees started striking before reaching a deal. That would have involved some 340,000 workers. Close to 3,000 Starbucks workers protested what they called unfair labor practices. 1,400 members of the United Electrical Workers went on a strike after rejecting the company's contract offer. 6,000 workers at Boeing's Aerosystems went on a strike, also rejecting the company's contract offer. Add to that 80 Amazon drivers who protested unfair labor practices. And McDonald's employees in California went on a strike over paid sick leave. Well, it becomes evident how much of a common occurrence these strikes are. And we can't forget Hollywood. General Motors, Ford Motor Company, and Chrysler, well-known names in the car industry, brand names with record incomes, but not so for the average worker.
They should be paid more. The corporation is making billions of dollars. And these people have been with them, and the cost of living and stuff like that. They've been with this company 20, 30 years.
Tens and thousands of the United Auto Workers are officially on a strike. The three Detroit automakers have failed to reach an agreement with the union, which represents about 146,000 workers. One major issue on the table, workers' pay. The union has proposed 40% hourly pay increases over the next 4 years. The average U.S. auto worker on a manufacturing production line earns about $28 per hour as of August. That's up only $1 from the previous year. The problem began on an agreement that the auto workers made with the government, which bailed out the big three automakers. The problem is, the workers hired in 2007 or earlier earned an average of $33 per hour, but the ones hired after 2007 earn only $17 an hour. Why? Because this agreement was made as a goodwill gesture to help the automakers get back on their feet after the crisis. But now autoworkers' hourly earnings have fallen 19.3% since 2007. And that is not fair as they see it. Even the U.S. politicians see it that way, like Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
The fight you are waging here is not just about decent wages and working conditions and pensions in the automobile industry. It is a fight to take on corporate greed and tell the people on top this country belongs to all of us, not just a few.
But strikes in the U.S. are happening at a more frequent pace compared to previous years. There were 424 work stoppages in 2022, including 417 strikes and 7 lockouts. Work stoppages increased by 52% from 2021 to 2022. The number of workers involved in work stoppages increased by 60% from 2021 to 2022. The number of striking workers as a consequence saw an increase. Since the year 2021, the numbers have been rising steadily, with 650,000 to have threatened to go on a strike so far this year. The strikes point to a deeper problem within the U.S. economy. Things are not that rosy when it comes to Americans' income and economic well-being. For example, homelessness has been on the rise in several states, most notably California, and also in New York City.
The unhoused population has exploded with the addition of the new arrivals. For example, here at St. Bartholomew's Church, where we start serving, we were seeing on average anywhere from 250 to 275 people, more or less regularly. Once the new arrivals started coming, our numbers got up over 400 people.
اون چیزی که انسان را
مطمئن میکند ذکر خداست، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Date February 11th, 1983. The noble and devoted nation of Iran, they are defending the territory of the beloved Islam and their own country and have placed obligations on all of us. If it was not for their gallantry, there would be no revolution and no victory of this magnitude would be attainable for Islam and the Islamic country.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. Well, in this program, we read some sentences of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh and then try to shed light on some of the important points in these sentences in order for us as Muslims to make use of these teachings in our daily life. Well, on the concept of the mosques, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh said, O nation, preserve your own mosques. O intellectuals, preserve the mosques. Do not be like the Western intellectuals. O lawyers, preserve their mosques. You know, this sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh is about mosques and their significance for Muslims, you know, is in fact addressing all the groups of Muslims in the society, whether lawyers, whether, you know, intellectuals, or even ordinary people.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi, sallallahu alayhi.
Given the importance and virtues of mosques, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has attributed mosques to himself. It is symbolic and it shows that the significance of mosques, what is done in mosques, is aligned with what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants and within the interests of Muslims. Influenced by the Holy Book of Quran and Hadiths as well, Masjid is regarded sacred and of important status in Islamic culture. The Holy Book of Quran denotes that only those who believe in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and the Day of Resurrection are qualified to maintain Masajid. Sacredness and merits of Masajid amongst Muslims is one of the factors of preserving this institution. According to the Islamic teachings, Muslims felt obliged to maintain and preserve Masajids. Therefore, each Muslim would try to take part in building, repairing, and maintaining a masjid. So mosques are sacred places for faith, taqwa, worshipping God, and saying prayers. And that is why the founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran has encouraged Muslims to attend these sacred places. Thank you very much for being with us. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha.